It's 1320 AM and W248DE broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Staples.
I'm Monica Ricks in New York. President Biden says he's headed to Florida this weekend to survey damage from Hurricane Idalia.
To the people of Florida and throughout the Southeast, I'm here to make clear that our nation has your back, and we're not going to walk away. We're not going to give up. We're not going to slow down.
Mr. Biden says he has signed a major disaster declaration there and ordered all federal resources to help with response. Former President Trump has pleaded not guilty to trying to influence 2020 election results in Georgia. Trump's plea means he won't have to show up for a hearing in Fulton County next week. His attorneys are also working to separate his case from the state's 18 other defendants. New disclosure reports show Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas has made some changes to his finances after getting criticized for accepting lavish gifts and perks from a GOP mega donor last year. CBS's Jan Crawford has those details.
He makes several amendments to some of his previous filings, notably a real estate transaction with Crow, who bought three properties owned by Thomas and his family members in Savannah, Georgia, including his mother's home. Thomas said he didn't realize he had to report the sale because he didn't make any money on it.
Flight attendants could be closer to hitting the picket line soon after voting yesterday to authorize a strike. CBS's Chris Van Cleve reports this comes ahead of what's expected to be a very busy Labor Day weekend.
That sends a very clear message to the bosses in Dallas that the flight attendants mean business. You know, they've watched the pilots get a lucrative deal worth billions of dollars. The flight attendants argue they're having trouble paying their rent, and it's their turn to get taken care of.
Delta, American, and United pilots all got new contracts without disruptions. X, formerly known as Twitter, plans to start collecting biometric data on its users soon when its new policy plan takes effect next month. So what does that mean?
It's likely that a lot of these features are going to be used for stuff like passwordless login, which is a popular growing trend on the internet, where your phone's fingerprint sensor or facial recognition features are used to log into websites instead of having to memorize or keep a list of passwords.
At CBS News tech contributor Ian Schur, the policy takes effect September 29th. College football kicks off across the country today, but in Lincoln, Nebraska, it's all about volleyball. The women's team broke a women's sports attendance record last night with more than 92,000 fans packing Memorial Stadium to watch its match against Omaha. The previous record was set in Spain last year. This is CBS News.
At Staples, school savings are always in session. From art supplies and essentials to the latest tech, in stock and priced low. School on, save on at your local Staples store.
Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies based on product and subscription plan.
Hey guys, did you know there's a generic form of Viagra that works just the same, but is 95% cheaper? And you can get it online? Just go to 4hims.com/joy. Through Hims, you'll get a free medical consultation, discreet shipping if prescribed, a 100% online process, and trusted generic alternatives to the name brands. Add up to 95% off. That's right. Get generic for Viagra, the same active ingredient as brand name Viagra, but for 95% less. It's the same medication, still prescribed by a licensed medical provider, but with zero copay, no expensive appointments, and no awkward face-to-face conversations. To start your free online visit, you need to go to this exclusive address, 4hims.com/joy. That's 4hims.com/joy for your free online visit. forhims.com/joy.
When you think about early labor unions, do you think of Wisconsin? You should. The state's first labor union formed in Milwaukee in 1847 when the bricklayers organized, then the Carpenters Union in 1848. The National Labor Union didn't even form until 1866. A State Historical Society report shows Wisconsin's union members also pushed for workers' compensation and unemployment insurance legislation, becoming a model for other states. For Civic Media, I'm Terry Barr.
For WFHR and WIRI, I'm Melissa Kay. Here's what you need to know in central Wisconsin. In Adams County, the Ethics Board meeting will take place on Friday, September 1st, from 9:30 to 11 a.m. at the Adams County Courthouse in County Boardroom A230. You can also join the meeting virtually. Visit the website co.adams.wi.us to join by Zoom. There's an important meeting coming up in Marshfield toward the end of September. The Marshfield Parks and Recreation Department is working to provide an update to its Comprehensive Outdoor Recreation Plan, or CORP. A public information meeting will be held on Wednesday, September 20th at 4 p.m. to present the preliminary findings and gather feedback from the public. It's an important step to evaluate outdoor recreation facilities' demand, trends, and issues. Gaining input from local people is truly useful and effective to help guide the decisions going forward. Attendees can ask questions and share their comments. I'm Melissa Kay, Civic Media News.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR. Mainly clear tonight with lows around 51. Winds out of the southeast, 5 to 10 miles per hour. 85 tomorrow, a blend of clouds and sun. Lows level off around 63. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy. Daytime highs approaching 90. Saturday, with a chance for scattered storms. 99, mainly sunny skies and calm Sunday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 77.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Midday Magazine for this August 31st, 2023. I have your host, James J. Mayloff, here. In part two, we're going to welcome in Janelle Weir, horticultural educator with UW Extension. Right now, joining us, we have our good friend, Mike Hittner. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon, James, and everybody in Radioland.
And we have joining us on the phone our good friend, Tom Bremer. Tom, good to talk to you.
Good morning, or afternoon.
Yeah. No, Tom.
I'm a little behind.
Tom, if you didn't do it, I was going to. One of us was going to do that, so I appreciate you doing that, Tom. Thank you. And thank you both for being here. We love talking with our friends at Historic Point Boss. Mike, you know how much I love talking to you and talking history and everything. And today we get to talk about two great events going on. Let's start with the Harvest Fair.
Yeah, the Harvest Fair is something we've been doing. Tom, what do you think, probably 20 years at least?
At least.
Yeah, maybe 25, and we do all the normal harvest activities that you would imagine that they would do in the Wakely's day. I'll be making sauerkraut, taking the cabbage and shredding it, and we'll have some samples from last year for anybody, James, that wants to try it from last year's crop. And then we'll be doing some apple pressing for cider. We have our own apple trees, and of course, we have those available, and so we'll press that, and then we use that for both the spirit walk, and we use it for winter feast, so it's utilized. And I just brought in some beans. I was harvesting our beans out there. I picked them on Monday, and then I shucked them Tuesday or Wednesday. It took an hour and a half, but we got heritage beans that we use for different bean projects that we use for winter feast for food and everything, so we're trying to be kind of as much self-sufficient as we could, and we could be, because, of course, in the Wakely's day, they were self-sufficient. They had to. There wasn't stores around in the early years, and they had to raise or catch or trade for whatever they could get. So that sort of thing. We've got a couple new things this year, which is kind of exciting. And Tom, maybe you can talk about, we got Ann Rosner, who normally, and will again work with you this year on the cooking class, but she does foraging of different herbs and things, and she's going to have borage and raspberry leaf tea for people to try, and she collected some violets this year, and she made jelly out of them, and she's going to make a little toast and give you a little piece of toast with some of that violet jelly on it for those that haven't ever tasted that. And then she's also going to talk about foraging for sumac and elderberry blossom, bee balm, and German chamomile. So she'll have some examples of that. And this is stuff that you can get in our area. So it's available. It's wild, and either that or people are growing it in their gardens or whatever. So
I've talked to your kids about this. When it comes to foraging, that is one of the things in the last 10 years that has gotten a real upswing. A lot of people have been doing this, which is always kind of funny how people go back to what used to be and what was old is now new and that kind of thing. So I imagine that that's going to pull a lot of people in just that alone. It's interesting.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. And then we also have a Victoria Ast, A-S-T, from Baraboo, Wisconsin, and she's a wool aficionado, and she's going to demonstrate different wool techniques, and she'll be able to teach some classes in the future, and she does felting and all kinds of things. She can tell from the type of sheep, what you'd use that wool for. She's that well-versed in that.
That's awesome.
That sort of thing. So something new for us, and I think that'll be people really enjoy it and pick up on it sort of thing. And, of course, all the buildings will be open, and the school will have projects for the kids. We also have a little, we've encouraged the last year or so, a little passport. So the kids go around and get it stamped from each of the buildings they're at, and then at the end they get a pencil and some paper, or they get a little piece of candy or something like that, some kind of little treat at the end. And so, and surprisingly, I think Tom would vouch to this, there's a lot of adults that like that passport too.
Yeah.
So it's kind of interesting. And then, of course, Tom is following up the Saturday later with the cooking class. And so that's a tradition that we've been doing. Tom, what, probably 12, 15 years?
Oh, a good 10 or 12, yes.
10 or 12 years.
Well, it's got to be 10, at least.
And that's kind of blossomed into its own. Started out, you know, relatively a little smaller and everything with less people involved, but now you've got quite a crew that gets everything ready and does different things as part of the project. And also, of course, we want to encourage the public to take part in that. And that you should sign up in advance for, because they got to know how many bodies they got there to get supplies and everything like that. And I think, what is it, Tom, still $15?
Yes, it is. Yeah, $15.
Same price it just started at is $15. Mm-hmm. So it's just to cover supplies and that sort of thing. And hopefully, and some of those people have come out of that cooking class and been good volunteers interpreting or whatever over the years. So, I mean, it's been a good resource for us.
Yeah. Before we get into the campfire cooking, go too far ahead, I do want to talk with Tom a little bit. Tom, how do you prepare for the fair? What is some of the things that you're doing to get ready for the fair?
Well, in the cabin, we're not as involved in that with our fur trade demonstrations and things. We kind of tell the story of the fall,
mm-hmm.
where the fur traders are there, and the Native Americans came in many times to get supplies for the winter on credit.
Mm-hmm.
It's part of the fur trade that's not very well explained or known too much about.
Right.
But they would get supplies that they needed. And then in the spring, when they brought their pelts back to trade in, then they would pay off their debt and most hopefully have some extra so that they could then resupply themselves for the summertime area. Because they traveled around, not great distances, but from hunting camps to the maple syrup, and then to a place where they would have their gardens and probably along the rivers where they could fish in the summer. So we kind of do that life cycle story, and then talk about the cabin and how they would prepare for the fall and winter in the cabin. Yeah,
it's not too different, Tom, when we think about it. When we know about the Diebels and the Sweets grocery store, the neighborhood grocery stores that did the same thing, not necessarily for 6 months, but they ran a line of credit in most of those places. And so that was up until probably the mid-50s, early 60s, until the advent of what we call supermarkets came about. But that was a common thing, to run up a tab and then you'd pay it at when the payday came or whatever. So
Right. And a lot of people don't understand the credit system, and it's well documented in the treaties that were signed with the different tribes, that some of the fur traders were granted money from the government to pay off debts that had accumulated over the years from different members of the different tribes.
It's very interesting, and really love to hear more about this. And you can hear more about it at the Harvest Fair. Mike, one of the things that stands out to me about this, and God, I love the passport idea. I really do love that idea, is with a lot of the events like the Spirit Walk and things, you're going there and you have plans. You have something to do. I love the Harvest Fair because there's plenty to do, but it's also a great opportunity if you haven't been there in a while or you've never gotten to check out the Historic Point Boss. Here's a perfect opportunity to come by and check out the schoolhouse, the trading post, at your kind of leisure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, well, we've talked about that before, James, that some of these events are very busy, and you don't have time to check out things or talk with individual interpreters. But this is one of those events that only occasionally might it be busy. The rest of the time, you could spend an hour maybe in the cabin and talking with Tom or Joe or something about what they do and how they do it, and what about this or what about that, and can I get involved? And, of course, we always encourage that. And we've talked about usually save the last couple minutes of the program for volunteer opportunities. And so that's always a great time, you know, to do that sort of thing.
Mike, how do you get ready for this fair? How do you prepare for this? Would it be easier to ask you what you're not doing? Because you're busy.
Well, I already started making a list, because this next week we got to pick our apples. We got about 3 bushels now, and we got to pick the rest of our apples. Normally you want about 12 bushels of apples. And we'll also go out to one of our local cranberry bogs, and we have a good relationship with. They have some apples. If we need extra, we probably will be okay this year. But they also grow pears, and we like to throw in some pears with the apples, because it gives a different flavor cider. Yeah. Apple cider, so it's a little apple and pear cider mix, and the more varieties of apples you get, the better and the more unique flavors you get. If you only use one variety of apples, well, it tastes always the same. It's almost like going to the grocery store and buying, you know, apple juice, which is homogenized and pasteurized, and it's pretty generic after a while.
I got to be honest with y'all. I didn't know that. I'm learning that. The city boy's learning that right now. God, I love talking to you guys. That's really interesting. Yeah.
So if you want to get at least 3 or 4 varieties minimum, and then we throw in a few pears too, just to mix it up a little bit. So,
and as we always like to mention, this is a great one for kids, especially I think little kids. When they take in these events, their brains are sponges, and they're just taking in all this knowledge. And one, it's just cool to learn about your history from where you're from. But I think the empathy it creates too, and the perspective that you can have. Now, maybe at 5, 6 years old, they're not thinking about it that way, but as they get older, that perspective comes a little bit more and more in tune in their brains, and they have this data to kind of look back on.
Yeah, I was just talking. I had to pick up something at the F&F this morning, and Katrina said that she was telling somebody, a good friend of ours, that, well, her 4-year-old was cracking black walnuts, and so she was just cracking them on her own. They got kind of a little greenhouse sort of thing, and so she was in there, and then she needed something to pick the shells out, so she took like a chopstick or something, sharpen the end of it to help pick out. So she was using her ingenuity.
That's awesome.
Even though they got something to pick it out with, she didn't know where it was at the time, so she was figuring it out. So kind of like the pioneer kids would learn that sort of thing. And what's nice about coming down there, James, is between the apple cider pressing and the kraut making and the corn grinding and all that, we encourage the kids to get involved with it, so they can have hands-on besides just looking at it and asking those questions.
One of the least surprising things I will hear today, though, is your grandchild or Katrina's kid doing that. Like that's par for the course. That makes sense. Yeah. I think a lot of little kids could learn like that and enjoy that part of this.
Sure.
There's so many layers to this event where, with family-wise, that I think, you know, if you want to go there with your buddies, you can have a good time just as much as if you bring the family down or something. This is one of those things that everybody can find something to really enjoy and take in.
Yeah, and also the Heart of Wisconsin Genealogical Society will provide lunch. So, you come down, don't worry about it. There'll be food available to purchase, and so you can have a good time. And plus, whenever you go, you got the samples of the apple cider, you got samples of the sauerkraut from last year. Wherever you go, there's usually samples of some sort. The tea from Ann Rosner's making. So it's a good learning and tasting experience. It's you're using all your senses when you go down there.
True. Great point. That's something you're really going to enjoy about this event. Again, the Harvest Fair is coming up 10 to 4, Saturday, September 9th. Tom's excited. We have Tom Bremer and Mike Hittner with us from the Historic Point Boss. Tom, I'm glad you cleared your throat or whatever there, because I want to talk to you a little bit. I'm just messing with you, Tom. Campfire cooking. Let's get into that, the workshop that will concentrate on cooking methods and foods used by our ancestors. Tom, now, I know this is your wheelhouse, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Tom, you've been doing this for a long time, Tom. What is something that you look forward to every year about this event?
I think us learning from the students. That sounds weird, but each year we've got an outline and we go through it. It changes from year to year, certainly.
I love that answer, Tom. I love that.
Pick up something.
Yeah.
From a student. Grandma used to do it this way or whatever, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I'm a loose teacher. I teach acting. I don't really count that. But I've learned from doing it. Teaching is a learning experience. I think I've learned almost as much from my students as they have from me. I think that's a really good answer. That's great.
Yeah.
Tom, if people haven't been to this, the campfire cooking workshop before, what can they expect?
Well, we're on September 16th from 9 until 4. I don't think we ever quite get to 4 o'clock. It's usually sometime after 3, we finally get through the whole program, then we go home.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll first of all start out with talking about cast iron and the other campfire cooking utensils and gadgets that we've collected over the years. And then we're going to go into some real primitive stuff where In the days of before the Native Americans had been exposed to Europeans, they heated, heated water by using hot rocks to bring the water up. We have a demonstration of that.
Hmm.
We'll do. Then we go into cooking, and the people that come can help us as we prepare main dishes that we will eat later on, things like cobbler and lasagna and cranberry chicken and pork and kraut, that sort of thing that we're going to have main dishes at the lunch part of the thing. And they get to participate in getting that food prepared.
Hmm.
They'll then move on to fire starting. We do flint and steel fire starting. If the sun is out, and I hope it is, we will also do the burning glass method, sort of the old magnifying glass, lighting fires with that. They'll do some cooking there also, smoke roasting of fish and venison, bread on a stick, bread dough wrapped on a stick and toasted over the fire to bake it. One of the guys brings a homemade reflector oven. He's going to make pineapple upside down cake in the reflector oven.
Oh, that's awesome.
One of the gals does some real, what we'd kind of call caveman cooking.
Hmm.
We're going to do bacon and eggs. We're going to do some things called corn dodgers, and they're going to be cooked on a rock.
Oh, wow.
Not in a pan, just on a rock over the fire. It's a very smooth piece of slate. We have that we're going to be able to use that on corn dodgers. If your people aren't familiar, it's hot water cornbread that's cooked on a griddle or a pan or a hot rock that they would have made and eaten and then taken with them. It's kind of a very early corn meal bread type thing. It works out really well.
Is that early fast food? Is that like an early snack? Is that like a to-go snack? Well, it sounds like you just make it on the road.
It's a to-go snack.
Yeah.
None of this is fast.
Yeah, right. Strong point. Yeah. Very strong point, Tom.
You're going to have to rename this, Tom, the cooking class and the fall feast. It sounds like it's as much eating as cooking.
Yeah, it does.
Oh, it is.
Tom,
go ahead.
I was going to ask, do you get into the cast iron itself, like the utensils, the items that you're using as much as the food?
Oh, yes. That's the very first thing we start with. It's an introduction in how to what it is, what you can find, how to do it, how to clean it, to season it, to keep it, whether you use it inside or outside. And we have several methods that we've picked up over the years to help preserve the cast iron. You know, that stuff is not indestructible.
Yeah.
You'd think so, and it weighs like a boat anchor. But when you think about it, you can't go from a blazing hot fire and then dump it in something cold.
Mm-hmm.
You'll break it. So, I mean, this is the kind of thing that we start out with first thing in the morning is getting to kind of learn about the – utensils that are available.
I know there's a lot of people out there that still have a lot of their cast iron, maybe from the grandparents or something, and they want to take good care of it. That's another little added bonus of taking this in, is maybe learning a little bit more better care for that cast iron.
That's another thing that Tom could tell you. It's a great product is beeswax for taking care of that.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Mm. Yeah, that's a one I learned a long time ago from another reenactor, and I thought he was nuts. Well, sorry. He was right.
It happens. Tom, yeah. As far as the types of meats or anything you guys are going to be cooking, is there any? Do you know now what type you'll be cooking exactly?
Oh yes, yeah. We're going to do pork and kraut is one of them. We're going to do some cranberry chicken. I mean, we are in cranberry country, so we've got to do a cranberry thing.
Yeah, yeah.
We're going to do fish. Three or four different ways. While we're here, mm-hmm. We're going to do a baked stuffed pumpkin.
Mm. Nice.
We're cooking a Cornish hen directly over the fire on a apparatus that we have. We're going to be doing a venison loin in a reflector oven in the cabin, kind of a hearth cooking demonstration.
Mm.
We've got beaver tail.
Whoa. Now,
it's not scaly part that you see and you think about. It's the muscular part that operates that tail. It's very good. Beaver, we've learned at our winter feast, is an excellent protein. It tastes good and it's easy to use. And you read in historic stuff about people eating beaver tail. Well, several of us have tried it. It's nasty.
Yeah, yeah.
The heart where the scales are.
Okay.
That end of the tail that he used for his rudder and his prop when he stood up to gnaw on the trees. That's not good. But the muscles that operate that thing is excellent. It's kind of the end of the backbone as it comes down there. And we're gonna roast some of that. We're going to do beans in the ground where you make a hole, put the coals, build a fire, and then put the pot of beans and then cover it with more coals and leave it for 4 hours. We're going to do that one.
You guys, I've
That's
learned
one that was
I've learned two new things today. I did not know that anybody had ever in human history eaten beaver tail. I did not even hear this before. And then you're telling me that there's parts of it that are good.
It's actually a delicacy.
Wow. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, we hadn't eaten that part either, but last year, after the winter feast, we had, we'd heard about this. We thought we would, in talking about it, we said, well, we'll try it, you know. We knew that the tail part, the scaly part, was not good at all.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
The other, we tried it out, and by gum, it was really good. So this reverse engineering thing every now and then, you kind of got to do that.
Yeah, yeah. That is amazing, Tom. I appreciate you so much. Always love talking with you. Campfire Cooking going on September 16th. Just $15. Class. I do have a limited class size, so we want to make sure to get people to register as soon as you can to get this filled up and everything. If you need to register, how can we just send them to the website, guys? Is that how you register?
Right.
Or you sign up for this?
Okay. And there's a phone number there, too. There are some posters out around the area if you happen to see one. But if you go on the website and it's contact us, then you'll be able to sign up through the website or this phone number also there.
HistoricPointBoss.com is the website, HistoricPointBoss.com. And, of course, Mike, I did want to always ask, like we like to, if anybody out there would like to be a part of this, to volunteer or anything, to please reach out to you all.
Yes, we can always use volunteers. In fact, we have some new volunteers that have signed up for this event, and so they'll be mingling and finding out what they like to do and which way they'd like to help us. And so we're always looking for volunteers, you know, so that's it's a good thing for anybody that has an interest at all.
And the Harvest Fair is happening Saturday, September 9th, 10 to 4, over at the beautiful Historic Point Boss. Adults, $3, children, $1. Find out more at historicpointboss.com. And come on down for these events. Help us keep history alive. And maybe if you feel like you can spare some time, we'd love you to put in a little time over there as well. That always helps. It helps us keep history alive over there with our good friends. always appreciate you gentlemen joining us. Thanks so much for the time.
Yes, thanks, James and WFHR.
And again, find out more at historicpointboss.com. That's all one word, historicpointboss.com. We'll be back with more Midday Magazine right here on WFHR.
Locally grown 1320 AM and 97.5 FM WFHR programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios.
Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
It's easy to listen to your favorite local radio station anytime. Download the Civic Media app from the Apple or Google Play Store, then listen live or whenever you want from anywhere for free.
For WFHR and WIRI, I'm Melissa Kay. Here's what you need to know in Central Wisconsin. A Rothschild man was arrested earlier this month for the third time in a three-month span on suspicion of drunken driving with kids in the car. Here's Brittany Merlot.
37-year-old Mark B. Combs was due in court on August 22nd and failed to appear. He was released on a signature bond and faces charges of an OWI with a passenger under the age of 16. He also has three counts of bail jumping. A warrant has been issued for his arrest.
The Biden-Harris administration invests $266 million in loans and grants to agriculture producers and rural small businesses. The U.S. Department of Agriculture will help rural business owners and farmers and ranchers lower energy costs, generate new income, and expand operations. This funding is coming in part because of President Biden's Inflation Reduction Act. The loans and grants will be awarded through the Rural Energy for America program, or REAP, with applications accepted through September of next year. I'm Melissa Kay, Civic Media News.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR. Mainly clear tonight with lows around 51. Winds out of the southeast 5 to 10 miles per hour. 85 tomorrow, a blend of clouds and sun. Lows level off around 63. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy. Daytime highs approaching 90. Saturday with a chance for scattered storms. 99, mainly sunny skies and calm Sunday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 77.
Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Midday Magazine for this August 31st, 2023. I have your host, James J. Mailoff here. I am joined right now by our great friend, Janelle Weir, horticultural educator with the UW-Madison Division of Extension, Marathon County, and Wood County. Janelle, good to see you.
Good to see you, too.
It's been so long. We were just joking beforehand. It feels like you were just here. It feels like you were just in. And it's always good to have you here. I make no bones about it. I love talking to you. I learn every time we talk. And it's not just me. My dad is a huge fan of the segment. You have helped him with his lawn so much. And that may have gotten you more points than I have in the family. And I don't know how that works, but it's
a lawn.
It makes sense. You're right. That adds up. We're going to get into a real fun topic today. Admittedly, journalistically, I'm a huge autumn fan. I love fall. It's my favorite season. I think a lot of us can relate to that out there. So we're going to get into a little bit of this.
Yeah. So today, what I'm going to talk about is the change of colors, fall change of colors. And, you know, kind of thinking about this, it really comes down to nature doesn't waste anything. You know, nutrients are constantly being recycled, you know, as humans, we're mammals, we're animals, right? And so we get our nutrients from the plants and animals that we eat, right? Well, plants, they get their nutrients from a combination of the sunlight. They mix the sunlight with carbon and water, and they make sugars. And they use that sugar to grow, right? So when during the summertime, the majority of a plant's nutrients are going to be inside the leaves, and are mostly what we're thinking about is that nitrogen and that phosphorus. If we think back to fertilizers, when we talk about fertilizing, we think about those main three that are numbers that are on every package of fertilizers. I think people talk about adding 10, 10, 10 in the spring to their vegetable gardens, right? Those first two numbers are nitrogen and phosphorus. They are incredibly important. They are the most, nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium. They're the most important nutrients for plant growth. Okay, so during the summertime, the majority of those nutrients are going to be inside the leaves, and they're stored either as pigments or proteins. And these are going to be things that are important for plants to use these pigments for photosynthesis. Okay, so photosynthesis—it's just that process of making those sugars, so that way the plant can grow. These nutrients are incredibly valuable in nature. Like I just said, you know, we get our nutrients by eating other organisms, right? Well, the plant's not going to waste those nutrients that are sitting inside those leaves when it comes time for it to drop its leaves in the fall. Now, deciduous plants, those are the plants that drop their leaves. They do that to reduce the amount of moisture that they would lose over the wintertime. Okay, so the leaves are going to drop one way or another. Now, the plant's not going to waste those nutrients, though. And so what it does is it takes the nutrients and it disassembles those pigments. And the plant actually reabsorbs those pigments back into the stem and into the roots.
Huh. So, Janelle, how do the plants know when to do this? Do they have, they just look at their calendar? Or do they get an update on their phone? I mean, that's...
A push notification.
Right, that's how I know when the season's
okay. Right. So they get the message by the sun, the length of the day, shortening over time, and also through the cooler temperatures. Cooler temperatures are going to help give that message, but even without the cooler temperatures, the plant would get that message just by the change in the day length.
Interesting.
So even if we have a warmer than usual fall, we're still going to have a change in colors.
But nature's so smart.
Right, so smart, right?
Thankfully for us.
What do they call that? Like a redundancy? Failure redundancy?
Yes, failure redundancy. It's interesting. It is. So most of this work is done before we see a lot of that color change.
Yes, that's exactly right. So that disassembly is happening, you know, before that disassembly is probably happening back in July, right?
Wow.
Before we even see anything, when we start to see it is really at the very end stage of the process. And so that chlorophyll is getting broken down and reabsorbed by the plant. In the meantime, we've got a couple of other pigments that are in play. So the chlorophyll's the green. That's what we see as green, and that's going to be responsible for photosynthesis. As it gets disassembled, these two other pigments come into play. First one's going to be, and I had to YouTube this so that way I would pronounce it correctly. And I'm so happy that I did, because I have always thought the way this word is pronounced was carotenoids.
Yeah, it's, I probably would have said it like that.
Turns out it's carotenoids.
Okay, we both learned on that one. We both learned.
So YouTube's my friend big time.
Yeah, thank you, YouTube.
So carotenoids, they are yellow hues. Now, the cool thing about carotenoids is they are always present. Even when the leaf turns green, even when the leaf looks green, the carotenoids, the yellow hues are present. It's just that the green chlorophyll is so strong, it's masking the carotenoids. Now, the purpose of the carotenoids is they are actually like protectors. The process of photosynthesis would destroy the leaf if the carotenoids weren't there protecting the leaf.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. I thought that was pretty cool.
It is interesting, huh?
And then we've got your anthocyanins. So your anthocyanins, those are going to be responsible for those red and orange hues. They're not always there. What happens is as the chlorophyll is breaking down, anthocyanins are starting to ramp up in production. You'll notice those green leaves that kind of turn a real burgundy color, and then shortly after that, they'll turn a real brilliant red and orange. What's happening there is the anthocyanin production is ramping up as the chlorophyll is breaking down and being reabsorbed by the plant.
Wow. That's wild. There's so much of that I don't think I've ever processed. I've heard some of this before, but I hadn't really processed before. Wow.
You know, the piece that I hadn't appreciated before, and I think it might be, I'm right now listening to an audio book, Braiding Sweetgrass, by Robin Kimmerer-Wall, I believe is her name. She is a scientist. She's a botanist, and she's also indigenous. And so it's a PhD reflection through an indigenous lens. I think that might be kind of why when I was thinking about this this morning, I kind of got my ear thinking about it in a little bit of a different way. The whole concept of nutrient recycling and how we're all a part of the system, you know. Yes. Trees know not to waste anything. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there might be a message there for us, too.
Yeah, absolutely. A big lesson. Yeah, it's been telling us for a long time. And I got to check that book out. That sounds amazing. That sounds like a really good book. So what are some factors that affect the fall colors?
So not all fall is the same. They're not, you know, it's not like every single one is going to be knock your socks off brilliant colors, right?
Very true.
The years that you have the most in just brilliant display of colors are going to be years where we have really cool weather and sunny weather. If we have a freeze too fast, that's going to interrupt that whole process of recycling those nutrients. It actually breaks down the leaves faster, and we kind of will end up with more dull brown colors, the tannins taking over instead. Another thing that can influence how brilliant the colors are is stress on the trees or on the shrubs. So that's going to be stress, like maybe they just didn't get enough nutrients. You'll see some really brilliant colors from dying trees. You'll also see that from maybe some diseases or any wounds that happen. Drought stress as well. So if we have nice, cool, sunny temperatures, but not freezing, you know, a nice long season, a fall season, because of the drought that we had earlier this year, we might be in for a really, really gorgeous fall.
Yeah, I was going to ask, and not to, you know, make you a farmer's almanac or anything, but looking at the summer we've had, the season we have, are there any kind of way we're seeing coming, or way it's going to look coming up? I'm trying to say I'm trying not to say the word predict. I don't want to put that on your shoulders or anything. But yeah, are we? Can we kind of gauge what might be coming?
I'm kind of thinking we're going to between, you know, now if we have too much stress leading up into fall, then the plants will kind of give up the pooch and just kind of go brown instead. I think we've got the perfect storm between the drought earlier and the rains that have come since, that I think the plants are going to be just stressed enough. The weather piece, I don't know. You know, we might be in for, I keep hearing rumblings that we might be in for a colder winter than we've had, we've been spoiled the past few years.
Yeah.
Which wouldn't be a bad thing, you know, it helps reduce disease and pest issues.
And I'm too focused on autumn and what you said about the changing of the colors and all that. I can hug you. I mean, that is awesome. You just made our day. You just said that's awesome news. I don't want to get us off in the weeds here on a side tangent, but I did, you touched on something, and I've thought of this before and never really talked to somebody that actually knows about this stuff. But it does seem like in nature we have a number of these moments with our plant life where they, when they're dying, they give it all, like they put out there. I'm so sorry, I'm not thinking of the plant that does this, you know, where its most beautiful moment is right before it dies. It puts all the color and everything it's got into it, kind of, and it only blooms once a year, once in a while. I think it's an orchid that does this. There's a couple of plants like this.
There's probably lots of plants.
I was gonna, to the point of where I'm trying to go with this, and without rambling, is the idea that trees do this too. There's something beautiful about that in nature that does this.
The entire point of at least living organisms is to pass on genetic information, right? So, or at least from a biological point of view.
Yeah.
Okay. And so, you know, if a plant is really, really stressed out, and I've done this, I shouldn't even admit this on the air, but I've done this with plants before where I have just pushed them. I'm thinking about a bougainvillea that I'm feeling really guilty about actually right now. Mm-hmm. But I pushed that poor bougainvillea all the way to the brink. And I'll tell you what, right before it died, it pushed out the last, I mean, it used up the last of its energy to create flowers, you know, just hoping that something would get pollinated and it'd make a seed. Of course, it was inside my house in the middle of winter, and I was slowly watching it starve to death from water.
Yeah,
I know. I'm kind of brutal.
I heard something that just blew my mind a couple of days ago. I was paying attention to the wildfires we've been having, and like a lot of people worrying about the people out in California or different places in Canada, worrying about these trees and our wildlife in these areas. It pulls my heart right there. But one of the cool things that looking for silver linings, one of the cool things I heard was this. I apologize again, not remembering the type of tree, but this pine or something.
Jack pine.
It knows what's coming. This fire is happening. That it's in stress. It is in danger. It doesn't know specifically that it's a fire, but it knows that it is in danger. And its last effort is sprouting out seeds. Kicking out seeds right before this happens.
So no, I'm thinking of something different. Jack pines, they require fire. I hope I'm correct. I believe it is a jack pine that requires fire for the seeds to be able to grow.
I think we are thinking of the same thing. Yep. That's just, it's incredible.
You know, it is. It is. And it's, I felt the same way you did when I first heard about it. But then when you take, you know, when you zoom all the way out and you're standing on the moon looking back at the earth, everything that at least in the natural world happens, it's happening for a reason. And it's been happening for a long time, right?
Yeah.
Lightning's been striking for a long time. Mm-hmm. And if a lightning strike alone was enough to end, you know, life, mm-hmm. in a certain spot on this planet, that wouldn't make sense over time, right? Like everything has a purpose. Everything has its place.
Everything's connected.
Yes.
It truly is. When it comes to storing tender bulbs for the winter, that was something we were going to get into, it looks like, or
do
no?
Do we have?
We could make a little bit of time for that if you want. Otherwise, if you want to talk some more about the weather, the stress of other things, that's fine too.
I could jump and just talk a little bit about some upcoming programs, I've got a really exciting opportunity folks.
I think that sounds good. Let's go ahead. We got about 10 minutes left. Let's get into that.
Got it. Okay. So, one thing I wanted to share with everybody, I'm super excited about the office that I work from, Extension. We are co-hosting Science on the River again this year. This year it will be September 30th, Saturday, September 30th. Just like previous years, we're going to have discovery stations set along the river. And right now we're looking for folks that are interested in hosting a discovery station. Mm. So what does that mean? What is a discovery station? Well, basically, what you are going to do is you are going to host a little booth. You needs to be have some sort of STEM focus, right? Mm-hmm. So that STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math. You need to have somebody present at the booth the entire time. So the festival runs from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Now, this is not a vendor opportunity. We're not looking for folks to engage in sales. It's demonstration science activities, right? And if you've got an opportunity to do something interactive, that is definitely encouraged. But if you've just got some cool materials you want to share, that's fine too. Give you an idea of some different, something that I've done in the past is I dressed up a cabbage head in my son's blazer from when he was in high school and my brother-in-law's fedora and put some googly eyes on him and then called him Inspector Cabbage.
Yes.
And I did a pH, how you can use cabbage juice as a pH indicator.
That's
and
great.
It honestly, if you've never seen that or done that before, it's so much fun because it's like a magic show with cabbage juice.
Oh, that's so good. First off, that's a great way to pull them in. That's a great way to pull
them in. Oh, yeah. Everyone wanted. I had people driving by and I could see them from their cars looking.
That's a great, great idea. But it's also the point of STEM, the point of all of this, it's fun learning. It's fun knowledge. And if you have a way of doing that, if you consider yourself, maybe you got a little Neil deGrasse Tyson in you, maybe a little Bill Nye in you or something like that, bring this to us. We'd love to have you be a part of this event.
Share, yeah. So if if you're a part of an organization that you think, you know, has a outreach slant, we would love to have you involved with us. If this is something that's interesting to you, you can reach out to my colleague, Kayla Rombalski. She's over at the Extension office at 715-421-8440.
And with this event too, we're going to be talking about this leading up to it. We're going to be sure to make sure to remind people about it and everything. And if you need that information again, weeks later, whatever, we'll have it. Well, so please reach out to us. If you can't reach Kayla or something, reach out to us because we will definitely make sure to get you a part of this.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And also, you know, just to, for everybody else. So that's kind of a shout out to anybody who may be a part of an organization or just have a love of, you know, sharing their favorite STEM subject. You can definitely reach out. Otherwise, for everybody else, just kind of keep that on your calendar.
Yeah, yeah. We'll meet you there. It's going to be a fun time. You have another one coming up programs-wise, Sewing Success. That's always an interesting one. I like talking about this.
I'm really excited about this program. So this is a, if you are interested in taking a deep dive into beginning horticulture, gardening, this is going to take you through. So some of the things that we talk about some basic botany skills. We talk about integrated pest management. We apply integrated pest management to weeds, diseases, insects, wildlife. And then we talk a little bit about really specific types of plants that you're going to grow. So lawns, small fruits, fruit trees, vegetable gardens, perennial beds, all of those types of things. So we're going to give you those basic concepts and then also kind of, it's more about teaching you how to teach yourself. I teach you how to find appropriate resources. Mm-hmm. This course is 12 weeks. It's going to be most Tuesday evenings at the McMillan Library here in Wisconsin Rapids from 5 to 7:30. Mm-hmm. The cost for this program is $125, and this is considered an approved learning opportunity. If your goal has always been to become a Wisconsin Master Gardener, you can use this as a vehicle to become a Master Gardener. Mm. But, however, let's say right now it's just not the season in your life to do volunteering. That's okay. You can come and just share and learn about gardening with me.
The point of all of our friends at Extension is get this knowledge out to you, and we want you to be a part of it. If you can volunteer, if you can be a part of those things in an extended way, we'd love that. I don't mean to say in an extended way.
I saw it. But we do want
you to be a part of these things however way that you're comfortable with.
Yes, yes. It's, you know, our goal is the Wisconsin Idea. Share that information.
Foundations in gardening, a little similar.
Very, very similar. Mm-hmm. You know, it's basically, it's the content is the same. The delivery is different. Mm. So with foundations and gardening, this is a self-paced course, completely online. It is runs about the same time from September through December. It is also an approved learning opportunity with the Wisconsin Master Gardener program. If you are interested in registering for foundations in gardening, I would suggest you could definitely give me a call down at the Extension office and I could send you a link. Otherwise, if you just Google foundations in gardening UW-Madison, that should get you to it.
Mm-hmm. And you guys have some webinars coming up that I wanted to touch on as well.
Yeah, so we've got some free webinars. If you're familiar with the term lunch and learn, that's exactly what these are. Short, 30 minutes. They usually leave about 5 to 10 minutes at the end for questions. And we've got some specialists that will be sharing their information at noon. So the first one was actually yesterday. That was about growing garlic. But you know what? If you're disappointed that you missed that, no problem, because the recording is going to be on the website within the next couple of days.
That's cool.
So the first one was growing garlic. We've got another one coming up on composting. That one's going to be September 6th. And then on September 13th, there's going to be another one about soil testing. Now, for any of these, if noon doesn't work for you, that's not a problem. We put the recorded programs up on the website. The only difference is you won't have an opportunity for live questions. Mm-hmm. Although, if you really want to, I'm pretty sure that they share their contact information. So if you did have a follow-up question, you can email these folks and they'll respond to you. But those are all free if you're interested. I would suggest just Google webinars for Wisconsin gardeners.
Yeah. It's another way of, again, getting that knowledge out there to people and just, you know, you being a part of these things. When we were touching on Science by the River, again, just for those that don't know, it's a free one-day event. And you know, Extension, like a lot of organizations and a lot of nonprofits, could certainly use the dollars and cents. It goes a long way in everything. But doing these things for free, having these events for the community, that's so much about what you guys are doing and what you're about, getting that knowledge out there.
We're about getting that knowledge out there. And like with Science by the River, I really think about community resilience. Mm-hmm. I think about how important it is, you know, like when we see our neighbors, you know, there's so many more rippling effects that happen mm-hmm. beyond just, you know, engaging young people in science education, which it definitely does, but it also engages the young at heart, too.
This has been a really, really fun conversation. A couple of things we've been able to cover today, Janelle. It was a lot of fun. As we were talking about fall color changes, is there anything we can do when we look at those things, when we see this stuff happening in our day-to-day lives, to really, like, make the most of the moment, to really appreciate, to really enjoy Mother Nature? Is there anything you do yourself to kind of make just be in that moment and enjoy that? We get no reruns in Mother Nature, but we have some consistency there. It's this mixed bag. I feel like for myself, sometimes I'll look at a tree this fall and bound to happen, and I'll be looking at it and I'm feeling like I'm missing something, like I'm not appreciating it enough. I feel like knowing this stuff is going to help me understand it a little bit more and appreciate it even more. Is that something for you that you do or do you would recommend even?
So, yes, I think the more that I have learned about anything, it has made me appreciate it. When I was in college, I had to take some astronomy courses and learn the night sky. Mm. And, you know, I've always, like when I was a kid, I was really interested in becoming an astronaut, and I've always been amazed by the heavens. But learning the sky like a map and knowing where to expect to see the stars and just understanding the process of star evolution and things mm-hmm. like that, it made me appreciate the night sky even more. The more I learn about anything, the more, you know, just like I said about the whole leaves changing their colors, you know, it's not always necessarily the facts, but maybe the bigger message that now that I'm getting older, I'm starting to pull out, kind of like that whole nitrogen, that nutrient recycling, and thinking mm-hmm. about how, you know, she doesn't waste a thing, does she, Mother Nature?
No. Way to tie it all back together. Nicely done. And a great lesson right there to end on. Thank you for that. Appreciate it. We'll talk again real soon. Appreciate you, Janelle. Thanks for the time.
Thank you.
Janelle, we are horticultural educator at UW-Madison Division of Extension, Marathon County, and Wood County. We'll have more Midday Magazine for you tomorrow right here on WFHR, locally grown radio.
WFHR Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248DE, broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
Your hometown station for news, talk, and sports. Locally grown radio is 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Eggland's Best.
I'm Monica Ricks in New York. People in the Southeast are just starting to pick up the pieces from Idalia after the storm made landfall yesterday in Florida as a powerful hurricane. Ashley Harris is in Punta Gorda and says floods destroyed her home.
Like Erie, all the water started coming up through the floor. It wasn't even through the front door. Just every corner of the house, just through the floorboards, all throughout the house.
Flooding in Georgia and South Carolina is expected to get worse as rivers there crest this weekend. But President Biden promises help is on the way.
The president said the federal government will help Floridians recover.
We're not going to walk away. We're not going to give up. We're not going to slow down.
Mr. Biden was also asked about the health of Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, who has frozen twice recently in the middle of a sentence as he spoke to reporters.
I'm confident he's going to be back to his old self.
Christopher Cruz, CBS News, Washington.
Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas made some changes to his financial reports showing he did accept luxury perks from GOP donors. CBS's Jan Crawford has details.
Thomas has been under intense media scrutiny for his relationships with wealthy conservatives and criticism that he didn't disclose some of the travel and other financial benefits they gave him. Today's filing is an effort to clean that up, as well as comply with new rules that clearly require judges to disclose private travel.
Americans Americans were in a spending mood last month. CBS's Jason Brooks.
The government reports that personal spending surged 0.8% higher in July from the prior month, the strongest gain since January. The headline inflation number was up 3.3%, also stronger than the prior month due to a rise in gas prices.
Right now, the national average for a gallon of regular gas is $3.82, but that could change in the next few months. Gas Buddy's Patrick DeHaan.
If things go well, if there are no surprises or curveballs, the national average could fall 35 to 50 cents a gallon by the end of the year.
Ahead of Labor Day weekend, drivers are paying about the same as they did last year.
Forward in time to view alternate futures.
The artist who created Doctor Strange's costume for his Marvel movies is one of three artists now suing artificial intelligence image generators to protect their work. Carla Ortiz's work has been featured in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, Loki, Rogue One, Jurassic World, and she says image generators use that work to create visuals for other movies and games.
Forward in time.
Beyonce's Renaissance tour just hit a huge milestone, becoming the highest grossing tour by a female artist ever. It's made more than $461 million so far. This is CBS News.
Today, better nutrition and great taste are more important than ever. That's why Eggland's Best gives you and your family more. And that's healthy news for everyone. Only Eggland's Best.
I'm Tamron Hall. Eggs are a staple in our diets, and there's only one egg with more delicious, farm-fresh taste plus superior